Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Hey guys, welcome. I am very excited today to have Mr. Adam Adams on the podcast. And just as a, by way of a brief introduction here, Adam has educated hundreds of thousands of investors through hosting conferences, radio and podcast interviews, speaking, mastermind groups, meetups, and his own coaching program. He's the organizer of the one of the most famous and highest rated meetups in the world and the host of the Creative Real Estate podcast. Adam's efforts to educate and inspire other investors have earned him the prestigious title Master Investor of the Year from Think Realty and the Adds Incredible Value Award from Lifetime Cash Flow. He's also a 3-times Hall of Fame winner in the Real Estate Mentor for his successes in multifamily syndications. Adam got his start in real estate through investing in tax deeds all the way back in 2005. Soon after buying a piece of land and getting the annual tax bill in the mail, Adam realized that true financial freedom wasn't created merely by owning a piece of real estate, but through cash flow. So in 07 and 08, Adam utilized creative strategies to get involved in his first cash flowing multifamily apartments. Today, Adam is partnered in over $50 million in multifamily real estate. Together with his company, Blue Spruce, Adam has focused on finding cash flowing apartment communities for passive investors. So lots to dig into today. Without any further ado, Mr. Adams, great to have you on today.
Well, it's good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Good. Just rocking and rolling on the usual things here. Lots going on, lots of plate spinning, as I'm sure no doubt you do. We kind of had a little pre-huddle on a lot of different things you guys do. And there's a lot of different areas I think we could dive into. But let's start, if you don't mind, with a little bit of how you got into real estate initially and what was the spark that got you into real estate investing?
Yeah, so my dad was always in real estate, so I grew up that way. I grew up thinking that everybody kind of started investing in real estate when they got older and boring and had a couple dollars. And so I just expected that would happen. It was 2005. My dad kept telling me from the very beginning of 05, he kept saying, you got to get into real estate. And I was like, I don't have any money. And he kept telling me, got to get into real estate. I was a college student. And well, it was kind of cool. He actually bought a piece of land and he gave it to me. So that part was cool. Then the less cool part was that he made me pay him after. So it was Christmas. And he said, he gave me a piece of land. And then he said, I need you to pay me $100 for that. And I didn't actually have $100. It took me a week or so to get him the money. But I was officially owning Piece of America. And within a few months, I think it was the next October, I got a bill in the mail for that piece of land. It was a tax bill and I'd never seen anything like it. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know if I actually had to pay it. I didn't think I was doing anything on the land that made me have to pay it. So I went up to my dad and I was like, Dad, what the heck? Like, they're going to make me pay $100 again. And he's like, yeah, that's normal. Like, get over it. You just pay it. And I was like, okay. So it took me another week or two to put together the $100. I got it together. And so when someone said that I could, that they would buy it, someone wanted to purchase it for $12,500. I was all for it. I was like, yeah. Get rid of it. And that's a big paycheck. I was a college student, like I said. So sold that in 07, at the beginning of 07. And I started managing property because I wanted to, I saw the power in real estate. So I just said, you know what? I'm going to start being an apartment investor, just like Robert Kiyosaki. I'd read his books. I went to his seminars. I'm always that person that does what people do, not necessarily what they're teaching you from stage. And I found out that Robert didn't do single family. He did multifamily. So I said, that's what I got to do. So I started doing multifamily in management in 2007 and until we sold that. The owner put almost $1 million in his pocket. He bought it for $1,050,000 and sold it for $1,999,000. And I was like, heck yeah. So I bought my first multifamily in 2008. That's kind of how I started.
So you transitioned from managing multifamily into the investor side pretty quickly after being inspired from Kiyosaki.
Yeah, it's immediately. I started calling. I was like, how can I do this? So I started calling every owner that had a property, one of their units for sale. And I said, hey, can I live there and manage a property? I got a lot of no's. I probably got 20 plus no's. And finally somebody said, we can talk. So I went to his place and he hired me on the spot. And that's kind of where I started.
Oh, that's fantastic. So how did you structure the first, you know, I want to, I guess, kind of talk about, you know, your podcast starts with the word creative, right? And so obviously that connotates some things in the real estate world. And I would love to learn a little bit more, maybe on a specific deal, how you did some of that creative financing, especially with regard to being young, with regard to having little or no capital to put in the deal. How did you pull that off on a specific deal?
Yeah. So that deal, what I did was when I started looking for bank financing to buy my first, I had a lot of banks turning me down and I kept going more and more and more banks. And just asking myself, how can I make this happen? Like, which bank's going to say yes? And how do I have to approach the conversation to get them to trust me? Because I actually was making okay money at the time. I had a little handyman company. And so we were pulling in some good capital. I had 13 employees. I was paying them all like 10 bucks an hour. And I was charging 65 an hour. So I was making a spread, you know, 50 bucks an hour by 13 employees and still I couldn't qualify for a loan because the company wasn't old enough. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how did I do it? Well, first I just tried and tried. I always ask myself, and this is a good takeaway for any listener. How can I, when you're thinking about creative real estate and somebody says no, instead of saying, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to do this at all. You just say, like, who can I talk to? How can I make it work? And so how I did it was one of the people that I was actually working with I was a subcontractor for, he had a lot of real estate, and I asked him if he wanted a partner on a deal. So what he did is he went in all cash, and then he sold it to me on owner finance with nothing down. And so I had actually just a private money loan on this property, and I was paying this other investor off regularly. So that's really how we structured that very first one, was just an owner finance note and mortgage.
So you brought in another outside all cash buyer
he purchased it outright and put it in his name, and then he sold it to me on owner finance.
That's great. What kind of a spread was the owner finance interest rate over something you might see from a bank?
Ooh, I think that we had, I think it was maybe a point. It was probably just a point different, and it was amortized over 30 year. I don't think that there was this was a long time ago. This is 11 years ago, but I don't think that there was nothing down. I remember that. And all I know is I was making about 300 bucks a month. I was netting 300 after all of my mortgage, you know, insurance, taxes, CapEx. I was making about 300 bucks and I lived on the property.
That's great. The huge takeaway there about using the power of questions, right? And I think your brain goes to work on any question you feed it. Why am I such a loser? Well, let me see. Let me find some way that answers that question. How can I get this deal done? Well, your brain doesn't care. It's just going to find answers to whatever question you give it. And I think that's a super powerful takeaway for anybody at any level on listening to this podcast, to start framing questions in a powerful way. That's a great takeaway. And a point more on the interest. I mean, one of the things that somebody told me early on was it's not the cost of capital that's inherently important. It's access to capital. If you have no access to capital, you're dead in the water and you're not doing anything. Paying an extra point on an interest rate to get a deal done that still cash flows and gets you in the game, I mean, that's like a no-brainer. So congratulations on kicking that off your investment career with that creative strategy.
Thank you.
So there's definitely some other stuff I want to get into that maybe is not multifamily specific, but can we fast forward, Adam, to what your current portfolio looks like and, you know, what are you guys doing? This is early 2019. What does your firm look like right now? What are you guys up to?
Yeah. Okay. So so 2 years ago we started, but it took us more than 9 months to close the first deal. Mm-hmm. It can be tough for a lot of people when you're getting started in commercial multifamily without credibility. There's a chicken egg syndrome, and it's like you can't usually get a deal locked up without the credibility, but you can't have credibility without getting a deal. So for us, we struggled for about 9 months, and I've learned how to fix that now. And I wish I could do it all over. You know, for my own students, I help them figure out how to get the credibility faster. But yeah, we were stuck. So what does the portfolio look like now? Well, we closed 3 syndications last year, a 16, an 83, and a 68. The year before that, we just had a 5-plex. So technically that's commercial. Right. So I think we have around 185 doors on the general partnership side. And then other parts of my portfolio, a lot of people that already know a lot about syndication understand if you close a deal, usually you'll make an acquisition fee up front. And so you can tell, like, when you close three deals in 1 year, like, you have a little bit more capital to play with than normal. And so when I had a little bit of extra money and there was some passive opportunities, I went ahead and I took it. So my philosophy is make as much money as you can with whatever your active business is. Ours is syndication, and put the rest passively into someone else's deal. So I'm passive in 430 something doors and active on 185. So usually I just tell people I'm a partner in 620 plus doors, but sure. But technically over 400 of those are just passive investments. I get regular paychecks and I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. And it's easier sometimes to just lump the whole portfolio together. I definitely understand that. But one of the things I like about multifamily passive investing is a lot of real estate gets packaged and sold as a passive investment. It's absolutely not. I mean, you know, if you have a single family house and you manage it, that is not a passive investment. There's insurance bills to pay. There's tax bills to pay, as you learned in college. There's any myriad of property management issues going on. So, you know, look, it's spitting off income every month. That's great. And there's a lot of different vehicles, I think, that people getting into real estate think are passive that they find out are just not. Whereas a passive investment in an apartment, really going to the mailbox is about as heavy a lift as you're going to do. Other than your due diligence and getting educated, make sure you're investing in the right deal. Obviously that's important, but once the thing's done, I mean, there's really nothing to do but cash the check and look for your K-1 every year and, you know, get your taxes filed. So I love that. I think people that are maybe investigating real estate need to really understand the difference between, hey, this thing's called passive. Can I really go on vacation for 3 months and it doesn't change the operations one iota? If the answer is yes to that, then it's passive. So
if I can interject and just piggyback off that, I don't know what your feeling is about turnkey rentals, but I have a portfolio of 18 turnkey rentals, and they're very much not passive. They're very much headaches to me. Right now I'm losing money on them, but the best I ever did was about 12% on my passive investments with other people's apartments. I'm making 16, 17, 18%, and I literally do nothing. It's never a headache. It's never stress. So like, yeah, I personally will never buy another. I'm selling all my turnkey stuff. So if you have any buyers on there, they can reach out to me. I've got some headaches for them.
Way to sell it, man. I'm sure you'll have people lining up. That's a great distinction. I'm actually in a kind of a similar situation. I've got about that many single family rentals and plan on holding them for a long term, but you know, they're not passive deals. And I talk to people all the time that are investigating being in a syndication or one of our syndications, go, and they're like, well, you know, we're going to put 20% down on a rental house and manage it. And it's like, boy, if those are your options, take a look at syndications, because putting 20% down on a rental house and managing it yourself to save a few dollars when you're a doctor or you're a business owner that, you know, has good W-2 income, it's just, it's kind of a false promise there sometimes. Whereas the syndications, I mean, I'm right in the same boat. I'm passive in deals. I'm active in deals. And, the ROI on the multifamily stuff is just great, especially if you're passive and it's, you got nothing to do, and it's very scalable too. So lots of multifamily stuff we could talk about, and we could get to the nuts and bolts of things. But I, you know, a lot of our guests are multifamily operators, and that's fantastic. You have a couple of unique skill sets, one of which is this in this meetup space where you've just been absolutely dominant with that. And, you know, if I could, I'd like to pick your brain a little bit and learn a little bit more about how you know, how you were able to grow your meetup that you do. And I know you even work with the meetup organization, and I know you've even taught some things back to them, which I thought was really cool. But can we dive in a little bit on your work with your meetups and how that progression's gone for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And please, if you have any specific questions, that'd probably be best. Because yep. I don't want to ramble on about a bunch of different topics on Meetup, but I'll start by going here. And I was new to Colorado and I didn't have any friends here. I hadn't met anybody. And, you know, your network is your net worth. And I figured, hey, if your network's really your net worth, then I'm screwed. You know, I don't know anybody here. So I was trying to decide the best way to get back into real estate in 2015. And I don't know how old Meetup was at the time exactly, but a few people were telling me you should try Meetup. And I was like, what is that? So I hopped on Meetup, looked at all of the real estate groups, thought it was amazing what Meetup was doing. But the problem was I had a couple kids and I couldn't really go to all of these evening meetups, because that's, you know, time to feed your kids dinner and get them ready for bed and all that kind of stuff. So I just decided to start my own meetup group instead, and I made it a lunch club, and I didn't think very many people would come. I figured I envisioned having like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 people, and I said to myself, if I could ever have 30 people at lunch, that would be amazing. But I've had at lunch, I've had over 100 people so many times. I never really thought that, but one thing that a lunch meetup has done for me is the people that can make it for 2 hours in the middle of the day tend to be a little bit more serious in their, where they are in their investing. So I've enjoyed becoming a leader of people that are actually doing it. In fact, last night, I went to someone else's meetup. They couldn't go themselves. So they asked me if I could take care of it. And so I got all my projectors and I headed up there and got it all set up. And it started at 6. Now here's the thing, like I'm used to my lunch club where 90% of the people that come are actually doing deals. And that seems normal to me. That seems awesome to me. But at this meetup that started at 6, it was like 5% of the room had ever done anything. The rest of them were new and getting into it. And so I think that that goes for anyone listening. It doesn't mean that a lunch club's the best. It means this though. It means if you want newbies, because you're maybe a coach or a mentor, you need to have it at night. And if you want experienced people, probably it's best to have it at lunch. So with that, I can turn it over to you if you have any specific questions on what I've done.
That's a great distinction on the lunch and evening. Thank you. What have you found to work? You know, you're talking about a handful of people up to 100 people. Anything as far as picking a venue? Let's say there's a listener that wants to start a real estate meetup. You know, what do you look for in a venue, and maybe some things, tips or things to avoid there?
Yeah, great. So picking a venue has a lot to do with what time of day you're going to be meeting, who you want to be there, how much money you want to spend on the venue, and if you have a sponsor to pay for the venue. So those are the four things you want to look at. Me personally, I never wanted to spend anything at my meetups. So what I did instead was I went to a restaurant and I called a lot of different restaurants until I could find a place that both had a private room and they had a private room that they didn't charge you for. Mm-hmm. So then I could just have my attendees pay for their own lunch or pay for their own dinner. And so I own some restaurants, if you want to save money on a projector, because my projector was like $700. If you want to save some money on a projector and a projector screen, you can maybe pick a place that already has a TV or a projector that's at their venue, and then you could save that. But I bought one and I brought it around everywhere that I went. Now, if you can have a sponsor paying for it, or if you don't mind paying for it, or if your members are paying you, it might be even better to rent out a venue, like just go to an event center or a hotel and borrow one of their rooms for like, the cheapest I found is $300 and the most I found is $1,500 for the day. So those are other options that I have used depending if I had a sponsor or if I was charging for the event.
That's great. That's really good actionable content on the venue. Thank you, Adam. What would you say about growing a meetup? You know, you said 30 would be like this amazing thing to happen and obviously blew that out of the water and beat your own expectations. Somebody that's had maybe started a meetup or that's small or they're thinking about starting it. What do you have to say about growing that?
If you want to grow your meetup, think about the two P's. So I would first say the first P would be to basically put yourself apart. And that means I'm trying to think of the other word for it. But it's basically putting yourself apart from everything else. And the second P is to promote yourself. So the first one is you want to find a way to distinguish who you are exactly, what you serve. If all the other meetups are paid meetups, you literally want to have a free meetup. If all the other meetups are free, you charge, you have to charge. And then you say, we're the only real estate meetup that actually charges money to be here. And that makes it so that everyone here is actually serious. All the other meetups are free. So it doesn't matter what you do, but you have to put yourself apart from everybody else. So you're the only lunch meetup. You're the only creative real estate meetup. You're the only meetup that charges $1,000 a month to be there. Either way, you're going to be able to look different from all the other meetups. So people can start thinking, oh, that's the one to go to. So that's the first part that I would say is distinguish yourself. And then the second part is how do you promote yourself? And most people that have a meetup, they do is they just post it on the group. All they do is just post their own meetup within Meetup. And I don't think that's really good enough. What we do is I private message people. I talk to you in person and I'll say something like, hey, you should come to my event that's coming up. And then I'll tell you why you should go. You know, you should come to the one that's coming up and here's why you should go. So a lot of private messaging. I also do posts on my Facebook. I think you could do posts on your Instagram or your LinkedIn. But if you're only going on Meetup, you only get people that are on Meetup. So that's why when I promote ourselves, I promote it in a lot of different spaces. But my favorite is private messaging. And an actionable tip to private messaging is something like this. And I think this is going to be a lot of value for anybody who is really planning to have a meetup, is you can reach out to other meetup, go to other meetup groups within your area, go to their, I mean, specifically online, go to the group, the website, and then you click on members of that group, and it'll show you a whole list of every single member. And you can organize that list to the people who were recently on. You can organize it to the people that were recently joined. However you want to do it, you can organize that. So you go ahead and click the button. And what I like to do is get the people that were most recently visited that meetups group. And then I'll right click on their profile and open it in a new tab. And I literally do this to a couple hundred people. I have a couple hundred open tabs of different individuals that are in a different person's real estate group. And then I'll private message them. But this is the most important part. So you got to really pay attention. You're not sending them a link. You're not saying, hey, you should come to my meetup. Here's the link. You definitely shouldn't have a long-winded, explanation of anything. It just comes across as spam. So what I usually do is I read their profile, and like I'm saying, only 1% of the people who are listening to this will actually do this, and they're going to get 1% results. The 99% that are not going to do this will get 99% results and be just like anyone else. So if you can do this, what you'll do is you'll read their profile, and it might say, I've done 5 wholesales. And you say, hey, I love that you've been doing 5 wholesales. Would love to talk to you about that. Are you going to the meetup on Friday? Maybe we could talk there. That is your pitch. Okay. Hey, I love that you have 300 doors. That's incredible. Love to talk to you more about that. If you're going to the meetup on Friday, maybe we could talk there. If they respond to you, they'll probably say, oh, I didn't know there was a meetup on Friday. And then you can just start getting into a conversation about it. You don't just say, okay, here's the link. That's too fast. You're asking someone to marry you on the first date. Instead, you just say, oh yeah, it's some wholesaling thing. I'll be there. I know there's a lot of people coming. Maybe we could talk there. If you want, I can send you a link. And they'll say, sure, send me the link. This is farther down the line in your private messages, and you don't send them the link until they literally ask for it. They say, sure, send me the link. So you say, here's the link. Do you want to talk before or after? And now you've made a genuine connection. They're planning to be there. And because they have a little bit of accountability, because they know that you want them to be there, and they know that you're expecting them to be there, they're more likely to show up, even more than the people that have RSVP'd to the group. So that is a huge takeaway on how to hack into Meetup and grow it fast.
Adam, that's super valuable and probably one of the more specific actions, sequences I've heard. So for those listening, think about that 1% rule. And these tools are so fantastic. We can reach all these people with the push of a button. That's great. But the response is going to be equal to the effort that you put into it. So you spam a ton of people and it takes you no effort, and your response is going to be commensurate to that. So love the detailed steps. Probably some people need to go back and rewind and take more detailed notes. I do, but that's, I asked for some actionable stuff, and that absolutely was it. Thank you. So you kind of laid out the keys to dominating Meetup right there. And the answer is it's some elbow grease and some specific steps, which you've laid out. There's really nothing hidden there. I love that. I want to kind of switch gears a little bit to some of the social media stuff you've doing. I was actually talking to my wife this morning. I said, yeah, I'm going to be interviewing this guy, Adam, today on the podcast. And he's probably more of a beast at social media than anybody I know. And I think it's because of these kind of specific action steps. But let's talk a little bit about, you shared some stuff with me in the past that's helped me on social media. What do we want to dive in, maybe to the algorithm specifically, or some, like, Facebook I know is a big one for you. What are some specific things you do on Facebook with your company and your message that have set you apart? Because you have absolutely set yourself apart with that stuff.
Yeah, Yeah, there's a lot of really cool things you can do on Facebook. My favorite parts about it is just hacking into Facebook's own algorithm. And so I know how to just make a good post. And if you do one or two good posts, that's great. But if you can do a lot of good posts, eventually Facebook realizes that people see your posts more and they interact with your posts. So just once you hit that algorithm, they start pushing you in front of more people. So as a general rule, just think of Facebook as if they'll give up to, they'll give 10, they'll show your post to 10% of your friends up to 100 people. That's the general way. There, if you make a post and you have 5,000 friends, if you've maxed it out, they'll show it to 10% of your friends or up to 100, which is only 100. So, yeah. So if that happens, they'll first start by doing that. And once they've done that, they kind of watch what's happening on that post. And if a lot of those 100 engage, they'll start putting it out to more people after that. And if they start engaging, eventually, you know, more than half of your 5,000 will have seen that post. But if they don't engage, they won't put that out to 101 people. They stop and they say, this wasn't engaging. So if you can imagine that for a second, and if you gave a post with information and you were, after you post that information, somebody might be able to consume the information with their brain, but they don't have to engage with the post to do so. So they'll literally scroll through the post, get the information, go to the next post that they actually have to engage with. And Facebook will think, oh, that wasn't an engaging post. Even though it was great information, they're not going to show your next post to the 100 people or 10%. They're going to show it to less because you're not engaging people. And Facebook has a responsibility to their investors to keep you on Facebook. So you want, they want people to be engaged so that they stay on Facebook. So just a subtle thing you can do, instead of giving great information that someone can consume without just scrolling past it, instead what you can do is you can find a way to require engagement. So you might say, instead of saying something like, I have a meetup group on Friday. Well, that's great. A lot of people are going to scroll through and be like, oh, Adam has a meetup group on Friday. But if instead you said, if you said, hey, I've got an event on Friday. If you comment below, I'll let you know, I'll give you the link. And, you know, I've got an event on Friday and I'll even give you free tickets. But you have to comment below. So you all of a sudden you have a bunch of people commenting on your post. And then if you can further engage with those people commenting, Facebook's going to keep putting your content in front of more and more and more people. So the best way, the best takeaway you can get from all of that I just said is ask, don't tell. Ask, don't tell. Don't give people information. Ask them to engage with you. You're going to hack into the algorithms. Facebook's going to put you in front of more and more people. And when you do that enough, they start starting your post with like 200 people or 20% instead of 10% or 100 people. So that's a really good actionable hack for people to get into the Facebook algorithm and start making it so people see their stuff. A lot of people have said to me that they'll come up to me at a conference and they'll be like, man, you're blowing up on Facebook, or man, I always see your stuff, or man, I love following you. And they wouldn't say that stuff if I didn't do those things that I just taught you how to do. And now you know how to do it. And now you can go and compete with me, and everybody's going to see you at the next conference and be like, I keep seeing you come up. I'm enjoying watching your journey. And so that's what you'll get out of that. If you really start to ask, don't tell.
Love it. Such a simple actionable takeaway. And Facebook doesn't know if something's good until the people vote on it through commenting or reacting, whatever it is. Really good stuff. I want to dive in a little bit, Adam, on On masterminds, talk masterminds. I know, you know, it's been a huge benefit for you. You've got a mastermind in Denver. Is that right?
Yeah, we actually run a virtual one.
Okay.
And we run a live one in Denver, and then we're starting a high end one with just a few people that have done quite a bit of stuff where we can kind of pass ideas about asset management or ideas about social media or meetup groups. But by the time someone hears this, I'll probably have three that we run, a virtual one, a local one, and then just one that meets three times a year. I love masterminds. I've gained a lot of growth by being a part of a mastermind that we're both in Rod Cleef's group, and that's added a ton of value to me. I think I started the group with 100 doors, and now I have ownership in 600 doors. I mean, the amount of growth that you can have. And if I could say one other thing, since I'm thinking of it, at Rod Cleef's group, it doesn't always have to be just about multifamily, right? At that mastermind, I shared, you know, that I needed to be able to spend more time with my kids. And I had a bunch of people come up and like give me actionable ways. And I can tell you that from that meeting 3 months ago, my relationship with my kids has changed immensely. So it's not all just business. If you're struggling with something and you want to go somewhere, you have a lot of people. Some of them have been there. Some of them have just some good ideas. So I've gained a lot of traction in my life, not just business, but just by being a part of a mastermind with people that are playing at a high level.
Yeah, that's great. I love to hear that about your kids, because it's so easy as entrepreneurs, maybe as guys, to just kind of charge ahead and conquer the next thing in the business world. And there's other pieces that health, relationships, especially with the kids. I mean, they grow up so fast, and you know, none of us want to have that regret looking back that we traded some doors for some precious time with our kids. So I'm personally very happy to hear that for you. And I was actually at that mastermind with you. And I'm super glad for you to, you know, to hear that. And I completely agree, you know, kind of shout out to Rod that he's put together a really special group there, and I've gotten a ton of value out of being that. I always talk about kind of osmosis. You know, you cannot help but absorb the habits and the mindset of the people that you're around, whether it's bank robbers or multimillionaire, you know, real estate investors. Kind of doesn't really matter. You're just going to start. We're such good mimics of our social and peer group that it's such an easy hack to just put yourself in the right room. You don't know exactly what the ROI is going to be, what's going to become of it, how it's going to turn out around. You know, today, actually, as we record this, when we get off the call, Adam, I suspect we'll be closed on a 280 unit project in San Antonio that I'm closing with another guy in the mastermind. So, you know, this is a guy that, you know, we met through that mastermind, and it's translated to some very real kind of business results here. I'll talk a little bit more about how people can kind of get involved in your mastermind. I think that's a really good overview. There's a ton of stuff we touched on, but I think you're clearly the kind of person with the content that you put out that enjoys helping people, and you've got some channels to do that. I want to touch a little bit later on how people can connect with you, but first kind of a few questions I want to finish up with. What would you consider your definition of success to be at this point in your life?
Yeah, good question. I would say that the definition of success would probably be fulfillment, happiness, doing what you want to do. So I don't think it means that you have $1 billion. I don't think it means you have to be retired or sipping cocktails. I feel like I'm successful, even though I'm still very much growing. I feel like I have success right now because I love waking up every day, love hanging out with the kids, and I love running our company and our masterminds. Like, I feel very fortunate, very successful. So I would just say is, if you're fulfilled by whatever you're doing, you're successful.
Love it. Love it. What is one kind of piece of wisdom if you were to leave somebody, maybe an aspiring real estate investor listening, that's going, wow, Adam's done a ton of stuff. What is something you would leave that person with as a takeaway?
Absolutely only one thing. Write it down. Focus. Here's the issue that I did. I did tax deeds. I did fix and flip. I did out of state rentals. I've tried to do assisted living. You know, I've even bought a mobile home. I've literally done and land. I believe that I've done pretty much everything out there that there ever was. And by trying it all, it was fun. I'm not going to say it was a bad thing, but I didn't grow nearly as fast as I could have if I just focused. And if somebody thinks, well, I have to do single family in order to do multifamily, where I really want to be is a multifamily, I'll just tell you, no, that's not going to help you at all. The bank's not going to look at you any better because you flipped 100 houses. The bank's not going to look at you any better because you own a bunch of rentals. If you're trying to qualify for a loan, it's a different animal. So if you're the person right now that's saying, I want to get into multi, but I've got to do some wholesales first, you're wrong. Just focus on the thing that you ultimately want to do and put all of your attention there, and you're going to grow a lot faster.
Love it. That's tremendous advice. One word, focus. Take that to heart. How can folks get a hold of you? What's the best way for somebody to connect with you? You know, whether they want to be in a mastermind with you or get coaching or reach out, maybe be an investor. What is the best way to connect?
The best way to find me and my company and our podcast to reach out to me is just going to our website. And that is realbluespruce.com. RealBlueSpruce.com.
Outstanding. RealBlueSpruce.com is kind of a catch-all for everything. And then, of course, I recommend, if you haven't already, find Adam A. Adams on all the social media channels, LinkedIn, Facebook, and start following there. And you'll be surprised how much he shows up in your feed because he knows how to do it. So good stuff. Adam, thanks so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. Look forward to connecting with you at the next event. And thank you for so much truly detailed, actionable content today. Really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.